Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. Welcome to Species Unite, the podcast where we talk to people who are fighting some of the hardest fights on Earth to stop the unnecessary suffering of animals. Just a warning, some of what you're about to hear is really tough to listen to. There's stuff about animal torture, about abuse. I think our minds often want to fast forward through this stuff to shut it down. But I also think that it's part of our responsibility as human beings on this planet to bear witness, to see and to hear about what we're doing to other species. So some backstory as to how all this got started. In 2015, I was volunteering at a dog rescue in Phuket, Thailand. And I met a dog named Snickers. And every day when I'd come in, he was waiting at the gate of his big dog run, like waiting for me. And he was this scrappy little street dog who couldn't walk. He'd been hit by a car and his front leg had to get amputated. I couldn't walk him, so we'd go sit on a bench and I'd feed him snacks and he'd hang out and rest his head on my lap. And so I only spent 20 minutes or so a day with him. For some reason, it made a big imprint. And when I left, I looked at their website and he was gone. So I wrote them and he'd been adopted. And a few months after that, I was looking on Instagram and there was a photo of a guy and two dogs. And one of them was this scrappy little, you know, street dog. I was like, oh my God, that's Snickers. And I wrote the magazine. I found out who the guy was. He was this guy named Mark Ching, who has an animal rescue in Southern California. I wrote his rescue. And so that led me to Mark Ching. I found out that Mark devoted his life to animals and that most recently he'd been rescuing animals in Asia. Now, Snickers wasn't from a horrific situation, but most of the dogs that Mark's brought back come from horrific situations like slaughterhouses. When Mark goes undercover into these slaughterhouses, he convinces the slaughterhouse owners that he's this big-time meat buyer. And once he's inside, he films everything.
I go undercover as a dog meat buyer. Undercover, I'm allowed to see the torture, the abuse, processing from beginning to finish on how the dogs are treated. I get to see the things that you wouldn't see normally because you can't, because it's hidden, because it's in a room, because it's shut off from the world. You know, there's this place that I went to where they crucify dogs. So they get the paws, nail gun them into the walls. And in everything I've seen, that is the most, I would say, just the most, like, atrocious. So I tell them, look, I watch you cut this dog's leg off. You hung this dog here. You know, burn this dog that's still alive. I'd like to take these dogs. I want to kill them myself and try the meat. I want to see how great it tastes because you've done this. You cannot unsee the torture. You cannot unsee the abuse. And I think we grow up in life believing, I don't know, that we don't think these things exist. Going into slaughterhouses, it just as a normal person, I believe we're not meant to watch things like that. And so I never knew that human beings could be cruel, not that cruel. You know, I'm not stupid. I've been in school, history. I've read all the atrocities and stuff. To actually watch it changes you.
Before I saw these videos, I knew the dog meat trade existed, barely, but I certainly had no idea about the torture that happened within it. I just didn't know before, Mark, and I didn't know people who knew. No one was really talking about it. But ever since Mark's videos, I've heard more people in this country talking about it. So in many Asian countries, it's totally normal to eat dogs. But with the exception of South Korea, dogs aren't raised on farms. They are stolen off the streets. They're stolen from people's yards. They're people's pets. And when they're taken to the slaughterhouse, it's literally like lawless, unregulated, just absolutely brutal from start to finish. Things like dogs being nail gunned to walls, being beaten with lead pipes and bats, dogs being boiled alive, being burned alive with blow torches, having their limbs chopped off while they bleed out. Or worse, some dogs have even a much worse fate. They're tortured intentionally by the slaughterhouses. They're dismembered while they're alive, or they get beaten until they're almost dead, and then they get brought back out of it, beaten all over again, brought back out of it, and then finally killed. It's like a dragged out process of just making the dogs suffer, which happens in certain places because of this myth that dogs that die in terror and agony, that their meat tastes better, that somehow the adrenaline like spices up the meat. And those are the dogs and the slaughterhouses Mark specifically concentrated on going in and filming in, because that's where the worst of the worst takes place. When I talk about what you do to other people and try to like share who you are and your work and people in similar fields to you, a lot of times people's reaction to me, and I'm not like pushing anything on it, just even mentioning it, people are like, don't tell me, I don't want to hear.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you get a much bigger version of that often from, like, because it's
all the time.
Your life.
Correct, all
right?
the time.
Right? And how do you share with, like, what do you do with that?
Well, when I meet people who don't know what I do, so I'll give you an example. When I met you in Toronto, when I saw you in Toronto, I was supposed to meet somebody to do a Canada Goose run, so like this coyote trapping undercover. And they just didn't show up. And so the iPhone was coming out that day. So I just was already at a mall because I was meeting this guy there. And so I stood in line. And because the wait was probably like an hour, I was next to two people. And I was really talking to this one lady. And we just started talking about, she just asked what I'm doing here. And I said, oh, well, there's an event. And veganism started coming up. And she started talking about that, you know, she thought vegans were crazy. I hadn't told her that I was vegan at the time. But when she started saying those things, you know, when she stopped talking, I kind of said, well, you know, I'm vegan. And she's like, oh, why? I didn't mean to offend you. And I said, I'm not offended. You know, I understand where you're coming from, that crazy, angry vegan. And I told her, you should see why I turned vegan. What would you like to? And she said, sure. And so I showed her one of my videos, which is usually what I do. When I start to talk to people that don't know about the dogs or don't know about animal rights or anything, I always start with that I say, you want to see something. And, you know, I guess my approach is different, but it's so impactful and so moving. And I had talked to that lady in line for like an hour, and she started watching all these videos that I had. And in line, she was literally crying, which is, and I can't tell you it's going to change her life or it's going to make her stop eating animals. I couldn't say that. But, you know, I try to come out with, I try to show them my experience and tell them, you know, I've been there and I've seen this. And so, you know, you should see what they're doing, because that's the only way you can understand it.
When you took your first trip, just tell me a little about what you expected and what reality was.
Well, I didn't even know. You know, just because I'm Asian, I knew they ate dogs.
Right.
But I never knew. You know, in 2015, it was the first time I found out that they had a dog meat festival. So in April, I started seeing all these pictures online of them eating these dogs, and I actually thought it was fake. I'm one of those people who think the media is kind of like exaggerated. And so when I left America, I left trying to, you know, just investigate or see like if it's true. And when I went on my first trip, it was worse than people thought. However, on this first trip, you know, I rescued 57 dogs, some ducks and a sheep. And when I came back to America, you know, I'd been posting these things on Facebook while I was out there and Instagram, and you can't really follow the feed because China filters all that stuff.
Right.
But you have to go on VPN and you can post. And then, anyways, I didn't know that people in America were even watching. And when I came back, I was so amazed that, wow, look, you know, and I actually felt like it did something great. And so I went back on trip two, and then I went back on trip three. And then on trip four is when I started going undercover.
Right.
And I think that's when it kind of changed to where the goodness that you're doing is lost. And, you know, it changes to something else.
Well, it's evolved quite a bit. Your life before trip one must have looked very different than your life now, I would imagine. Right? Like, do you see it as kind of there's a before and an after to, like...
Of course. Not just me, my family.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. So, you know, before I left, no life is perfect because life is just life. But my kids were healthy, my marriage was happy. You know, in business, we do well. And so, and, you know, this trip, which I've done before, my first few days after the reality started setting in, I even have a hard time communicating with my family.
And do you think that you've had, like, throughout your life, did stuff go on in your life pre all of this that's prepared you for this? Like, how did you, do you know what I mean? Do you think?
Well, I'll tell you this. So a lot of people in Los Angeles know me well.
Yeah.
And if you know me well, you know, I think in order to understand the suffering of another person or an animal, you have to go through similar suffering yourself. So when I was younger, 20 years old, I actually went to prison. And, you know, I was young and anyways, people do dumb stuff.
Right.
And, but it's really there that I learned how to become human. And there's always this question asked, how can this guy leave his family and his two children? How can he go over and over and over and come back wanting to commit suicide? But it's because I was that dog. And when you're in that cage, as much as you can think about what it would be like, you'll never know until you're there. To have no voice, no rights, no freedom. To have every single choice taken away from you. You know, when I was there, I don't know, I thought every day that someone was going to save me. And every night when I went to bed, I said, God or whoever, they're going to come for me. And in the end, no one did. And I had to save myself. But these animals, they don't have that.
Right.
You know, when I was in Cambodia, I just documented, I think you heard the story. There was hundreds of cows, but there was a mother and the daughter. And it was so powerful to me because I had never seen a pair on the floor together. And then they took the ropes off this baby calf and they pulled her to the kill floor. And the mom, she had this ring in her nose to keep her from moving too much. But this mom started screaming. And it was so violent and so aggressive that I thought she was going to rip her face off because she wanted to save a child.
And she was attached.
And she was attached. She couldn't. And then they smashed the baby in the head. And when they did, the mom screamed. And then they came for her. When you see the slaughter of an animal, in almost all situations, they're fighting. They're screaming because nobody wants to die. They took this cow onto the kill floor, and she just walked out there. And they picked up the sledgehammer, and they hit her in the head. And she fell to her knees without even crying, without even making a sound, and got back up. And how I would for my own children, she stood there proud, and they hit her again. She fell to the ground, and they hit her again and again. Why that's so important is some people don't realize that other animals feel the same thing we do when our children are taken. And I believe if that was me, and if you did that to my child, I hope that I would have been that strong to stand there and say, kill me, because I'm already dead. And so, I forgot what your question
was. And so when you're standing there, and they're killing the baby cow, and the mom cow is watching and screaming, What are you like? Are you just like stoic and solid and saying I have to witness this? Like how are you saying in that
moment? I
was
crying,
right?
And tears were running down my face. And some people sometimes look at what we do and they get upset that I didn't rescue that cow or I didn't save that dog. You can't. People don't realize that sitting in a slaughterhouse, it's me and my translator, and there's 40 guys killing animals with knives. It's not realistic to do anything. And we just hope that through the documentation and the truth that people cannot see, that is what changes one person to stop eating meat and maybe go vegan. Or that person who couldn't believe that they're doing these to dogs. They become active, outspoken. And maybe in the end, it's that person who saves that species because they become an activist. And that's the hope. And it's so strange how people can watch somebody go undercover into a chicken farm and be okay with that. But when I go undercover into a dog farm, it's this huge outcry. You know, you just let the dog suffer. We're not letting the dog suffer. They're working. This is every single minute of the day around the world.
It's 30 million dogs.
30 million dogs. You know, we rescue if we can by asking for samples. And now we shut down trucks and we run them off the road and we shut down slaughterhouses. But the concept or the hope in the future is bearing witness. And so what we all did last night, going to the vigil, being there and seeing the animal, and even more powerfully, being on the kill floor and showing the reality of what they have to endure. And as human beings, it should be our responsibility to witness those things, because unless we do, nothing will change. But the big things we're doing now is shutting down trucks. So on this last trip, we intercepted a truck and we took all the dogs. And on my next trip coming up, I'm going to spend 3 days in this province. And the whole goal is that if we take enough of the trucks, they'll go out of business.
How do you explain to me how you do the trucks on exit?
Well, we know where the slaughterhouse is. And so somebody will be watching the slaughterhouse and they'll see the dogs being loaded up. And we'll all be in the area waiting, and when the driver leaves, yeah, he'll tell us. And we'll follow him until he's about to get onto the highway. And right before then, we run him off the road.
Wow.
And we literally pull him.
And what does
the
driver do? He's like, right.
Yeah. And so we pull him out of the car, and we try to get him to sign the dogs over to us. Uh-huh. And if not, then we call the police.
Okay.
Most of them will sign the dogs over to, because if they don't, then the dogs are under quarantine anyways, and they'll probably lose the dogs anyways.
So wait, why would the police care?
There's just a quarantine law rule. Quarantine the dogs for 21 days, and and then it's just, yeah.
That makes sense.
And so it's just a rule that already exists that happens. Okay. Sometimes they let the trucks go because they help the slaughterhouse, and sometimes they don't.
Right.
But we try to put so much pressure on them that they'll sign a paper.
Right.
And saying, and so... we've intercepted, I think, about 6 trucks altogether.
I would think, too, because you were telling me, and I want to hear again, about that you brought government officials in Cambodia into a slaughterhouse or an official.
Correct.
And I would think on some level it's somewhat like here, if I went to the government officials most, and I was like, you don't understand what's happening to our pigs and our... And people, there is a lot of the response, like, oh, it's our, you know, it's meat, it's, yeah, this. The awareness of the violence, are they aware, and what happened with bringing?
Yeah. So before I left on trip 17, I had just woke up the day I was heading to, and I said, I wonder if we can try to bring some of these officials that we're talking with right now into a slaughterhouse. And so I had put a message out, and in Cambodia, we were able to bring one person, in Korea, too. And so now that's part of our main focus. And the only reason why is in Cambodia, he was undercover with me. We went to a few slaughterhouses. And, you know, they're working when we go out. One of them, they have a deferring process where they take this animal after it was hung and beaten, and it's all tied up, and they throw it in a pot of hot water. Right. And it was so powerful for this guy to see, because he was saying, aren't you going to help that dog? And I was like, what can I do? I can't do anything. And he was like, do something. I was like, well, the only thing I can do is try to buy the dog. Just do it. And so we ended up saving that dog. And he had asked this question, isn't the dog supposed to be dead first? And I said, supposed to be, but oftentimes they are not. And for him, it was such an eye-opening experience.
Right.
Because he was there and he got to see it.
Right.
And even in Cambodia, a lot of dogs are seen as pets, too.
Yeah.
And so in Korea, we brought 2 people from the government in. it was eye-opening for them too, but because the level of violence is different,
right,
where Cambodia is a lot darker, in Korea, I don't think it was as effective, but one of their main arguments is that they have dog farms in Korea, so all these dogs are specifically dog farm dogs. And so when we went to the farm, I took them to a couple farms, and you could see all breeds, golden, terriers, and he was like, well, they could be breeding for a pet store. And so we took him to two slaughterhouses, and he said, they shouldn't be here. What are they doing here? And I said, I don't know why you're asking me, because I didn't even live in this country. But this is what we're trying to tell you, that these are people's pets, and they had collars on. And we even have a video that we did where I rescued a dog from a slaughterhouse, a bunch of dogs, and one of the dogs had a microchip. And we called the mother when we found out I had the microchip. This dog was stolen from her backyard. So somebody jumped a fence, stole her dog. The dog went, we were supposed to, a breeding farm.
Right.
And then ended up at a slaughterhouse. And it was such a powerful moment because this mother and her daughter flew in. And the mother couldn't speak that much English, but the daughter was pretty fluent. And she was telling me, you know, this was my sister. I grew up with this dog. She slept next to me. She was on my bed. And when someone stole her, I was so broken. And I had asked her, what are you feeling now? She goes, I'm so scared she's not going to remember me. And so after I recorded them and I videoed them,
uh-huh,
I said, hey, I'll bring the dog out.
Uh-huh.
The dog came out of the room, ran straight to their feet and was crying. And was literally crying, and the mother and the daughter started crying, and it was so amazing how the dog remembered his family, and it's just a powerful thing. And so,
wow. And how long had the dog been gone?
Over a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, over a year. It's just like, wow. And so, yeah.
And so, do you find, especially like Korea, do you find a lot of people are anti the whole, for the farming, the trade?
In Korea, it's changing, meaning
right,
that, you know, the younger generation has pets and the pet population is very, very much growing. And when that happens, those people who have pets, they no longer want people eating dogs because of that. You
right.
See? Maybe if people started having pigs as pets here, that might change too. And some people do, but or you know, other animals that we don't want to be eaten, it just broadens that connection, and it just...
Right.
So.
Right. Right.
I just did an undercover video in the fur farm. I don't know if you saw
it. I saw it. Was that your first fur farm trip?
No, second.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you went to Finland?
I went to Finland and parts of China. And, you know, even in that video, I don't know if you get to see at the end, but there's a fox actually being skinned, and you can hear him screaming, and they pulled his fur over his face, and you can hear, ah! And then when they pulled it all the way to his neck, he goes, oh, and it was like the last scream before he died, I assume. But in that same situation, that animal's supposed to be dead, but they're not.
Right.
You know, one thing about fur is it's a total senseless industry, and it's built only on one thing, demand from people who want to wear clothes. And that's so necessary. They don't even eat the meat. They just store it away,
right,
you know.
Right.
But we went to a bunch of fur farms, and actually in one of them, they sold the meat to Korean people who use it in Korean barbecue. So people who are eating Korean barbecue out there, they're actually eating foxes or pork foxes, and just don't know.
Right.
But so we're doing fur farms, and we started doing a lot of animal testing. So we're doing vivisection. I created this cover where we have a pharmaceutical supplement company in America. And in China, we tried to enter because you have to test on animals to enter. And when we did, we used a laboratory that said they tested on animals, but they lied to us and scammed us. And when our products went to market, it burned people's faces, and we got sued for millions of dollars. And so now we found new companies. And I have told these companies that, you know, I have to see that you're testing. And so can I step in on when you actually do a test? And they said, okay, you can come in January. We're doing this for this. And
this is how you get in, you're saying?
So this is how I'm going to document
this. Okay, yeah, yeah.
and we're changing all this gear, so I'm going to be wearing a pin that has a 1080p camera in it. And so.
So it's hard to get into those too, right?
They're, it takes time.
Yeah.
Correct. And you know, we build websites that say I'm a dog meat buyer, that say I own a supplement company, that say
wow.
Yeah. So people check. And so, you know, we have all these fake emails. And even like if I text you, my name doesn't come up as Mark Chang, it comes up as a different name.
Right.
You see? And so we.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, or else we couldn't get in. It'd be impossible.
Right.
And so you have to establish a cover first. Many of these people will look at your website. You know, we pay for Google AdWord links. So if they click on something, they'll see my picture. You know, I had this one animal industry where it was called Copeland Industries. And so we used to process beef and pork because I go undercover into those things too.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's how we kind of.
Well, you go undercover into everything.
Everything. Really,
right.
As much as we can. It's rare, but sometimes people know who I am.
Yeah.
And so for those things, I won't get in.
And what happens? They just say no? Or?
Well, they're pretty upset, and I just leave.
Do you have, like, practices or methods for coping? I mean, it's such extreme stuff you sit through and go through and witness and are actually in. Like, are there...
You know, I'm not ashamed to say, but I drink.
Right.
You know, and, like, I'm only human. People think that I'm somebody else, but I'm not. You know, I don't know how to cope with it. Yeah. I don't have a...
I mean, I don't know who does. Like, yeah. It's so massive.
Well, people do. Like, I talk to some people from other groups who are undercover investigators, and I think that, I don't know, you know? And so some people can cope with it, and some people have a harder time.
But you keep going back.
Well, I think if you're in my position, you would understand that you go back because you're so destroyed and so desperate that if you don't, it's even worse. And while I believe in humanity and the strides that we're making as individuals, or some people are, I see the part of the world that if somebody saw that, it's like, how in the world could you do that? And how did you even think of doing that?
Yeah.
And it's just getting worse.
You have a foundation in China that Suki Su runs.
So we have an offshoot of Animal Hope and Wellness, which is Animal Hope and Wellness China. And, you know, at this place, we have maybe 600 dogs now. But not only that, we have, I think, 11 pigs, all from slaughterhouses. Goats from slaughterhouses, ducks, cats, geese, I mean, chickens, all from slaughterhouses that we've liberated. Any chance we get to liberate, like open rescue, we try to.
And I'm sure there's a lot of differences country by country in terms of torture and slaughter. And
yeah. Every place is different. Every region is different.
And so are you're working on, like, you're doing different kind of modes of it? Because you're everywhere, right?
I'm in many countries. Uh-huh. You know, even here in America, we're trying to build these wall cameras where these cameras go in these small slabs that look like tiles that you can push into a wall and like cover with paint or get dirty to match. Like, so you can sit there, and in a slaughterhouse in America, you could actually film for 30 days and get constant feed of... Sometimes people think these atrocities are isolated, but they're not.
No.
They're constant.
Right.
And if you have a camera in there and you can show, like, hey, in 30 days, look at what they're doing.
Right.
And that's what brings the outrage. That's what hopefully brings new reform or stuff like that.
And that's what brings change, right?
That's what brings change, correct.
I ended my conversation with Mark by asking him about what other people could do to help. And he said the number one thing anyone could do is to spread awareness. Put it on social media, just spread it, talk about it. But one thing I think that's worth mentioning is that in a lot of ways, we're not much better in the West. The way we treat our factory farmed animals is nothing short of appalling. Just even the torture that's legal in the US, the fact that we cut pigs' tails off, we castrate them without any painkillers, we cut their teeth out with pliers, we macerate baby chickens, which means throw them in the meat grinder. we put mother pigs in gestation crates that aren't much bigger than their bodies for their entire lives. The list is on and on, and that's just the legal torture. Next week, we'll learn more about the crisis here in North America when we talk to Anita Kreintz to hear about her movement, the Toronto Pig Save.
And so I really believe in the power of bearing witness. It's a life-changing experience. And, you know, there's nothing like meeting the victim of any struggle. Like when you meet the victims, I mean, that's the most important story. Like you get to meet these victims and you want to help them. And, you know, when you see this, the magnitude of the animal crisis, I just believe more and more people, in fact, everyone needs to do this. So the idea is when someone is suffering, particularly when animals are suffering, because they're the greatest victims in terms of numbers and even, you know, the types of atrocities that are happening, don't look away. But come close as you can, and try to help.
That's coming up in the next episode of Species Unite. Thank you for listening to Species Unite. If you are moved by Mark and his work and want to learn more, go to animalhopeandwellness.org or follow them on Facebook or Instagram at Animal Hope and Wellness. I want to thank everyone who made today's episode possible. Our producer and editor, Gary Knutson, Natalie Martin for all things digital and social media, the magical Anna Kallner who wrote and performed the music, and a very special thanks to Sharon Mashihi and Chris Anderson. And thank you to Corey Fossum for the clip that we played in the beginning. You can see his video, and you should. There's a link on our website.